Greet each one in Jesus' name this morning. I appreciated the service so far, very inspirational. Very much something that we need on our journey to heaven to meet like this with brethren and sisters and be encouraged. You know, a week can drain you really fast. A week has a lot of draining aspects. I don't feel like I have anything profound to share this morning, necessarily. But the recent several months have had me thinking a lot. We had a couple family members between my family and my wife's family. One has completely left the Christian faith to imbibe Judaism, actually moving to Israel to be a Jew, as I understand, back to looking for the Messiah. Raised in a Christian home, his father in the ministry. I'm like, how can this be? How can that ever happen? Last night I got a text from another family member, not directly from them, indirectly, but it showed his posts that he is now posting of who he really is. He has come out and left the world know that he's gay. His father in the ministry at Mennonite Church. This past week, I sat with a young man. The meeting didn't go real well. As the meeting went on, we found out he's not being totally honest. We ended up trying to help him to see that if he's claiming to be a Christian, the fruits are showing that he's not. And it's a burden on my heart. All these situations that I shared is people who knew Jesus, or at least had opportunity to be with Jesus, understand who Jesus is. And my Bible says that in the end days that there's going to be a departing from the faith. Brothers and sisters, if we aren't in the last days, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. I'd like you to turn to John chapter 6. I was just arrested as I read this passage in my devotions how Jesus moved from one people group to another people group and how different the people groups responded to him. It never arrested me how Jesus, he went from the miracle of feeding the 5,000, he went from there to the Jewish people, another group of people, and he ended up having to hide from them, lest they would take his life. But in John 6 here, it starts out with the seaside grassy area and the crowd that was there. We all know the story of the feeding of the 5,000. And Jesus suggested that they go get bread for this multitude. And Philip, he starts doing a little math. This is a little bit the same deal as when it's your turn to buy pizza at work, I guess. You start doing a little math. How many people we have here? How much is this going to take? What might this cost? And he says, well, Jesus, 200 pennyworth. It's not even going to give them a little bit. I mean, this is going to take a lot of pizza. This is going to take a lot. One denarius, as I understand, was a day's wage for an unskilled laborer. So that 200 denarii would represent about 7 months' wages. 7 months of unskilled labor. He said that won't even touch it. In today's economy, what would that be? Maybe $29,000? $29,000, Jesus, isn't going to cut it. They won't even have a little. They'll barely have a little. But we know the story. They had two fishes and five loaves there, and just a little boy's lunch. That's all it was. And Jesus was satisfied with that and could multiply that, and he could bless that, and he could turn it into $29,000 worth of food. I was arrested. How fast this story transitioned. In one chapter, from this crowd, this well-fed crowd, where Jesus performed a miracle, and they idolized him as prophet, to the point that he was afraid they were going to make him king. He was afraid they were going to make him king, and he had to slip away because he became so popular in their eyes because of what had just happened. And he slipped away, and he went to the next crowd who was offended. And Jesus had to avoid them for fear of his life, because he told them that, "I'm the bread of life." He made a simple statement to them. He said, "I am the bread of life." And it says they were offended at him. The one crowd went home with bread and fish in their belly, believing that this truly was the Son of God, believing that this was a prophet because of the miracle they saw. The other went home in frustration and anger. Both met the same man in basically the same proximity of time. And Jesus had to respond in two completely different ways because the people responded in two completely different ways. My title is very simple this morning. Did you remember the bread? Did you remember the bread? As children of God, we find ourselves in similar experiences. Sometimes we feel like we are just moving in God's presence. The next day it feels like we are in nothing but a faith test. We're at that ledge where we're trying to figure out what to do next. We're terrified. The New Testament gives some descriptive words to help us understand the oscillating emotion and the varied experiences that are going to be a part of the Christian life. It uses some nice words, some words we really like easy. My yoke is easy. It's going to be easier for you to be a Christian. Or the word rest. Come unto me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. There's a picture of peace and rest instead of struggle and weariness. But then there are other words that maybe have some excitement to them, but it also has a demanding aspect. Words like soldier, words like good fight, words like put on the armor of God. When Jesus is our bread, we own the fact that Jesus came to give life. To give life in the varied experiences that we face. We have a choice to make daily to find this life and to find this power that's at our disposal. To get close to Jesus, even though it doesn't feel like he's close right now. And as we do that, we have this promise that he will share in our experiences. He will yoke up with us. He will go with us through, whether it's beautiful or whether it's tumultuous. He will go with us through it. We face some of the same hard things the world around us faces. But we look through different eyes. We have a different place that we go for our resources, for our strength, for our guidance, for our protection, for our security. We don't go to the same place the world goes. Recently, in looking through a paper, there was a picture of a girl in the obituaries that caught my attention. I thought, surely that must be a Mennonite girl. But it was a very young girl. I'd say her early teens, maybe, mid-teens. She was taken home prematurely. According to our norms, it was premature. But the testimony was that she knew Jesus personally. She knew Jesus personally as her bread of life. And I believe she was ushered into, her friends believe that she was ushered into a life of rest. She accepted Christ's broken body and shed blood as her atonement. And now her broken body can be disposed of because she has a new body. A new body. And those left behind do not have to grieve as those that have no hope. They had hope for this girl. We compare the picture to the young man that was killed this past week in a motorcycle accident. I don't know the journey. I don't know where he's at and where he was at in his journey with God. But I do know that there was a backdrop of opportunities. And it's sobering. The possibilities are very sobering of where he may be today. And we let that in God's hands. But I remember school board meeting discussions. Rebellion. Rebellion. Opportunities. You know, we make choices every day what we're going to do with the bread of life. Just like those people on the seaside, on the grassy knoll, and just like those people that found out that Jesus said it plainly that I'm the bread of life and became offended at him, we're dealing with Jesus today. We are dealing with the same Jesus. There's a song that I love because of the beautiful melody. It's that song, I Am the Bread of Life. I don't know if we know it well enough to sing it, but I am the bread of life. All who eat this bread will never die. I am God's love revealed. I am broken that you might be healed. No one who comes to me shall ever hunger again. No one who believes shall ever thirst. All that the Father draws shall come to me, and I will give them rest. I was thinking about that song as I woke up one morning. I knew the song was from a direct Bible quote, and I got up and searched the passage, where it came from, as my devotional, and I read John 6, and that's where this message was born. I was arrested by the responses of the two people groups in this passage, and I would like to speak to us who find ourselves in the same two camp possibilities this morning. We have the bread of life in our midst. We have to deal with it. We have to do something with it. Either we believe in it, we accept it, we enter into it daily, we make it a part of our life, or we reject it. I would simply like to remind us this morning that Jesus is the bread of life. And that we don't send him away offended, because we have a hard time believing that. As I walk with Jesus for these many years now, it's just mind-boggling. It just boggles my mind how someone could walk away from the fact that Jesus is the Messiah to looking for him to come again, to be coming again for the first time. Jesus is the bread of life. I would like to remind the one group that may be here this morning that never tasted that the Lord is good, that he is the bread of life. He is the bread of life. And he wants to be your bread of life. He doesn't want you to go through life frustrated with life, hungry, unsatisfied, scared, like John said he was, terrified about life. Our bread of life doesn't want us there. He wants us to open the book of life, the bread of life that's here, partake of it. We live in a world that offers nothing to quench the hunger on the inside. A world that lives for just another wild ride, another race, another spin of the wheel at the casino, another drink, another needle, another immoral relationship. I was talking to a Christian mayor in our conference room at Denver. He was a man that, very unique mayor, I must say, in what he's trying to do with the public school system there, and I don't know how long they'll allow a mayor like that. But he talked to me about what he's endeavoring to do with a place right in the town of Denver. It was a bustling business place at one time that ended up becoming an apartment for people that society really doesn't appreciate as neighbors. There was not much left to the complex but a sleazy tavern and 21 apartments. 21 apartments that shared 3 bathrooms for the whole complex. And he said the conditions in that building were, well, he couldn't talk about it. He said, I can't tell you. They had a plumber go through that contracted to do the job, and after he went through the building, he leaned against the door on his way out. He says, I don't know if I can do this. What he saw just turned him inside out. And what they found, they got 200 volunteers in, and he said they hauled out 60 cubic yards a Saturday for I don't know how many Saturdays. And he said, the things we found, I can't talk about. It was a place of prostitutes, it was a place of drugs. Deplorable conditions. And you can only imagine what they may have found there. But every person has the same decision to make that the crowds of people did in this passage. Our choices are going to take us somewhere. They're going to take us somewhere. The opportunities God gives us are for a purpose. We need to embrace them. We need to cling to them. The people that are around us to cheer us on when we're in terror are God's gift to us. We can allow God to help us daily to take out the garbage and do a reset and do a refresh. We can allow God daily to feed our never-dying soul. We can allow God daily to help lighten our load instead of give up and turn our back on Him and run. We can allow God daily to do that. We can experience His help in putting on the armor and fighting. Or we can say, I'm tired of this. And we can take the armor off and we can lay it down. And we can just come out. And we don't care who we disappoint. We can face life all alone on our own strength. And if our life is snuffed out at age 15 or age 21 or age 27 or age 53, and we will go to eternity all alone, and we'll face God. All alone. We'll be judged according to the opportunities that presented themselves to us. And we can die hungry. We can die hungry with the bread of life right here. Right here. The other people group I want to speak to this morning is the one who I trust that most of us, hopefully all of us, are in. The ones that have partaken of the bread of life and are now on a faith walk. They're trying to find the bread they need day to day. While they're living in a body that has emotions, a body that has feelings, a body that would like to jeopardize that walk of faith. A body that would like to make them believe that this walk of faith is just too hard. You know, there's only one way that I get strength to make it daily, and that is to take some time and eat. If we don't take time to eat, we eventually become weak. We become shaky, at least I do. We become tired. We become depressed. I don't care if we are here as a busy breadwinner this morning, or we're here as a busy mother, or a busy single who seems like everyone is leaning on us because they think we should have the time. We all are busy. We all are busy for various reasons. We need to be a people who understands that we've got to take time. We've got to take time to feed ourselves in the Word daily. Jesus wants to be our daily bread. It is up to us to allow Him to be our daily bread. Little children have what is called selective eating. At least a lot of my children had that. They start out maybe pretty much eating anything. But after a while, they become selective. After a while, they know that these carrots just aren't as good as the candy. And we get into this thing of needing to train them. Just because that candy they had at 10 o'clock doesn't mean that they can get by without carrots at 12 o'clock. We realize they need a balanced diet, and we work to bring that into their life. I want to remind ourselves this morning that eating of the bread of life sometimes takes effort. It sometimes takes effort. And maybe most times takes effort. Maybe most times it does. But it is more important to us adults than that spoonful of peas we're trying to get our children to eat. We need the Word of Life more badly than they need those peas. The crowd here in John 6, they wanted what we want today. At least they represent me. We want the power of God. We want the power of God in our life, but we don't want to take time to fill the tank. We don't want to take the time for that. Just this week on the way home from, just on Friday night, the way home from Youth Institute, my wife says to me, it's raining. My wife says to me, what's a gas tank look like? She was thinking about the weekend. I said, it's at a quarter. She said, we probably should stop and get gas. I'm like, it's raining. Stop and get gas now? Then I thought, maybe tomorrow we could stop and get gas. Maybe I could just make a special trip and do it tomorrow, go get gas tomorrow. After all, I thought about, why not get gas now? Why not get gas now? Yeah, it's raining, but that's why they put roofs over these things. Surely there may be a spot that I can pull under that I can do it without getting soaked. And I pulled in, and sure enough, I stayed totally dry, and I pumped the gas in the rain, and I did it right then when it was the right time to do it. You know, it's the same for the Word of God. If you're like me, there's maybe not those times that feels like the perfect time. There's so many other things that, there's so many reasons that we can give for not taking the time now. I like to read John chapter 26, and I like to break in at John 6 at verse 27. I'd like to just read a few verses here. It says, labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. Then said they unto him, what shall we do that we might work the works of God? See the question. They want to have the power of God. What can we do that we can work the power of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, verse 29, this is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom he has sent. They said therefore unto him, what sign showest thou then that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert. As is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. Now we see this people group also desired a sign from Jesus. I don't know if the miracle of feeding the 5,000 had filtered into their town ahead of Jesus getting there. I don't know how this conversation all went the way it did. But Jesus, for whatever reason, chose to not do the same miracle there. But the interesting to me, they wanted to know, how can we have the power? And how can you prove to us that you are the power? Show us. Show us that you are the power. I have a few points for the remainder of the message. The first one, enjoying the bread of life and the resulting power of God in our life starts with a simple act of faith. A simple act of faith. Jesus calls it a work to believe. He calls it a work. This is the work of God, that ye believe on him. I remember Aaron Shank sometimes preaching about that we do have a work. You know, this argument, we're not saved by works. And Aaron Shank, we do have the work of believing. And I'm like, well, believing isn't really work. I've changed my mind. Believing is work. Believing is work. That family of my relatives that's now living over in Israel, they didn't keep on the work of believing. They didn't keep on the work of believing. We must first believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. Second point, enjoying the bread of life will take careful prioritizing. Enjoying the bread of life will take careful prioritizing. In the morning, every morning, I have a choice to make. Now, I'm a morning person more than I'm an evening person. So I tend to have my devotional time in the mornings. I try and set my alarm accordingly. But when I get up and I set myself in my office chair, in my study, I have a myriad of choices to make, right there, instantly. I have a computer in front of me. I have a cell phone docked just beside it. At my disposal is the weather, the news, YouTube videos, my checking account balance, my emails, my WhatsApps, my status. And it's amazing how many things happen overnight. While I was sleeping, how many things come in. Distractions. There they are, the moment I wake up in the morning. I'm going to share a story that I read by Max Licata. His wife, Denilyn, called as he was driving home. She said, "Can you stop at the grocery store and pick up some bread for me, please, for us tonight?" And he said, "Sure, of course." She said, shall I tell you where to find it?" He said, "Are you kidding?" He felt like he was born with a bread aisle tracking system. And she realized that it was no use. She explains where it is. And she said, "Just stay focused, Max. Stay focused." She knew her husband. He wondered how he could tell she was nervous. And he understood somewhat why. With his track record in grocery stores, it wasn't the best. His mom once sent him to buy butter and milk, and he came home with buttermilk. He once mistook a tube of hair cream for toothpaste. He considered himself a charter member of the Clueless Husband Shopping Squad. And apparently his wife did too. because she wanted to explain where the bread aisle is. But I think she knew her husband in more ways than just that. But knowing that Dennelyn was counting on him, he confidently parked his car at the market and he entered the door. En route to the bread aisle, he spotted his favorite cereal. And he couldn't help but reach out and pick up a box, which made him wonder if he shouldn't get some milk too. So he found his way over to the dairy section and he found a gallon of milk, put that in his cart. The cold milk stirred images of one of God's greatest gifts to humanity, in his opinion, which is Oreo cookies. He was sure that this is one thing that will be in heaven that is on earth, but he didn't want to take a chance. He wanted to go home without them, so he went and he found Oreo cookies. And when he happened to be in the Oreo cookie section, he realized that he's really not far from the chip section. So he went over and he got himself a bag of barbecued potato chips. Why not? On the way to the checkout counter, he spotted some ice cream. Within a few minutes, he had a basket with every essential item for a totally happy and fulfilling evening at home with his family. He checked out and he drove home. He came in the door with his loot, and his wife evaluated his impulsive purchases and had one immediate question: where's the bread? And he realized that he had wandered around that store to every aisle but the bread aisle. Well, maybe not every aisle, but he missed the bread aisle. If she found any amusement, it was not without a required trip back to the grocery store for the one most important and forgotten item that he went there for in the first place. Now, we smile at that. Unfortunately, I can understand Max a bit too well. We smile at that. But might we be making the same mistake in a much, much more critical arena of life than the grocery store? Those distractions that I talked about, the pressures of the day, the culture we live in. We have our desire, we have this goal to have quality time with God. That's our goal. But we never get there. We never get there. We end up going to bed exhausted, and we never had quality time with God. And then we wonder why God feels distant. We wonder why so many are falling away. That young man that I spoke about at the beginning of the service, I started out our meeting. I said, so how's it going with you and God? Are you finding quality time with God? I read a verse or so. I read a verse or two since our last meeting. His life proved he was missing the bread aisle, completely missing the bread aisle. One verse or two doesn't cut it for a week. It doesn't cut it. Jesus told this group back there in verse 27 that they needed to have a focus. They needed to have a focus. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. In all your labors this week, I'm going to ask you the question, did you remember the bread? Did you remember the bread? Was the first thing you put into your shopping cart every morning the bread of life? Or the last thing, if you're an evening person, the last thing that you did before you went to sleep, did you spend time with God and fall asleep with thoughts of him? Did you fall asleep with that smile on your face and wake up with the joy of the Lord in your heart because you're in the bread aisle? You're in the bread aisle. It was nutritious. It helped you sort out. It helped you get around that curve, that fearful curve, that rock ledge. It reminded you to cast all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. It reminded you to keep your eyes off the junk food. He reminded you to commit your day to him. I listened to a few parts of some sermons from Billy Graham. And one thing that he said in one of his packed-out stadiums was, if you spend a good half hour with the Bible and in prayer, you will leave for work invigorated and refreshed and a smile on your face. And I think that works for staying at home with children that test you all day long. I think it works for that too. I believe that is what Jesus desires for us. I am the bread of life. Don't starve yourself all day long. Eat of the bread of life. The third point, enjoying the energy from the bread of life may not always be embellished with awe and mountaintops. It may not always be awe and mountaintops to have a consistent personal devotional life. Verse 31 says, our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. You know, they missed something. They expected that the kingdom of heaven was going to come with pizzazz, and it was going to arrest attention. It was going to be just as obvious as that manna that came down from heaven for their fathers. I believe they expected the kingdom of heaven to have more political perks. I believe they expected miracles and leadership that was setting itself up to put the Roman jurisdiction in its place or whatever government they were under at the time. But you know, I have not found that to be the way Jesus enters into my heart. It's being faithful through the mundane devotions that suddenly Jesus brings one that just really, really hits home. A daily exposure to the bread of life can so easily become tasteless and routine. And you know why some of the followers of Jesus got distracted at times as they literally followed Jesus? You know why I believe they did? Why so many didn't stick with him? Is there was too much space from one miracle to the next. There was too much space between them. They didn't have time to endure the routine so that they could experience the breathtaking when it happened. I read this in relation to our daily time with God. Private devotions aren't magic. They're not magic. And we know that for the most part. But we still can be tempted to think that if we just figure out this secret formula, the right time, the right mixture of the Bible and meditation and prayer, and the right mixture of some booklet, study guide to go with it, surely some others are having a more meaningful time than what I'm having this morning. Surely there is. Surely I don't have this formulated quite right. Surely there should be some more euphoric moment associated with this. I'm here to tell you, maybe I'm just plain down abnormal. I know I am in a lot of ways. But I have found that to really know Jesus and to really be close to Jesus, it just takes a lot of walking through the mundane so that you're there when the miracle does happen. So that you're there when he suddenly opens up a passage in a way you just never saw it before. The danger of believing that time with Jesus should be more than what it seems to be to us, there's a danger in that misconception is that it can produce chronic disappointment and chronic discouragement. And it can lead to cynicism that sets us up to give up. Or we can whip through our time with rapid fire to alleviate the guilt of knowing that we didn't spend any time with God. But it just doesn't seem to work for us. A taste for bread instead of Oreo cookies is a work of maturity. It doesn't just happen, it's developed. Just like we are okay with a child who puckers up his face when we give them the first sour experience, We know that they can mature. We know that that can change. We know that they can grow in their tastes. It's okay if there's no special spark in our Bible reading every day. In fact, I think ordinary devotions are good faith tests for us. We keep on. Brick upon brick is how a building is built. Lesson upon lesson is how we earn our degrees. Stroke upon stroke is what finishes that beautiful picture. The bricklayer doesn't focus on the last brick laid in a string of 2,000 bricks and say, oh, what a beautiful brick that one is. No, he sees a wall. He sees a work of little bits and pieces that after a while, one day he steps back and says, that's beautiful. I did that. Ordinary times with the bread of life will in time have extraordinary results. At the time of crisis, that ordinary time will have extraordinary benefits. As one preacher said, it may be one verse or it may be one chapter, but stay there. Stay there till it has time to resonate. We Americans are by and large a time-poor people group. We are forever running out of time. We're running out of time. And we're forever seeking ways to make our time reach further and have one click do more for us than multiple clicks. And efficiencies, we're forever desiring that. If we're not careful, we can lose touch with what is right beside us, the bread of life. We need to be careful that God doesn't become a distant instead of a close friend. Do we reach out in the Oreo aisle, the ice cream case, the chip aisle, 3 days in a row, and only reach for the bread of life the fourth day? That's not enough. It's not enough. I believe we're living in the last days, and I believe it's imperative that we stay close to the bread of life. Stay close to the bread of life. Can we tell our friends what's happening with the sports teams and the government news and the weather predictions? But we can't think of one little bit that we read in the bread of life. I remember going to conference years and years ago, shortly after I was ordained. The afternoon session, the moderator, I think the devotional leader didn't show or something happened, and the moderator said, okay, we're going to go around. And I want each one of you to share one blessing that you got from your devotions today, yesterday, or this week. What if I did that right now? What if I started here and said, I want today, yesterday, or this week? I want you to share one thing that you got from the bread of life. Would you have something to share? Shame on us if we have Jesus in our homes, but we're reaching for the Oreo cookies and the ice cream, and we're forgetting the bread of life. Shame on us. I'm speaking to myself. Verse 53, then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink of his blood, ye have no life in you. Well, we want to be a people that has life. It is possible to be lifeless because we never accepted Jesus. It is possible to be lifeless because we don't daily partake of the bread of life. God bless you as you again renew your desire to make the bread of life a part of your life. No one of us wants to fall away, as we see happening so easily, it seems so easily, with those around us. May God keep us faithful because we stayed faithful in partaking of the bread of life. Shall we kneel?